This episode is sponsored by Kinsta. Between juggling client meetings, managing your website, and keeping up with everyday tasks, who has the time to stress out about website security? Well, with Kinsta, the technical stuff is taken care of, so you can focus on what you do best. Kinsta provides managed hosting for WordPress, offering lightning-fast load times, top-tier security, and unmatched human-only customer support. Whether you're a business owner, web developer, or running a digital agency, Kinsta makes managing your website easy and efficient. Kinsta provides enterprise-grade security, being one of the few hosting providers for WordPress with SOC 2 and other certifications, guaranteeing the highest level of security for your website. Thanks to their unlimited free expert-led migrations, Kinsta ensures a smooth transition for you from other hosting providers. Customers have reported 200% faster load times post-migration to their platform. What I find cool about Kinsta is their fast and reliable customer service and premium features that are included at no extra cost. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. That's Kinsta.com. This episode is brought to you by Propel Auth. People take authentication for granted, but it's more than how customers log into your product. It's how you manage your relationship with your users. The easiest way to make authentication your advantage is to use Propel Auth. Propel Auth is more than just functional. It's powerful. With tools like managed UIs, enterprise SSO, robust user management features, and actionable insights, Propel Auth adapts as your product grows. And the best part? When Auth is effortless, your team can focus on scaling, not troubleshooting. That means more releases, happier customers, and more growth for your business. Save dev time, win over your customers, and propel your business forward with Propel Auth. Check them out at propelauth.com. That's propelauth.com.
Okay, team, we have 2 months to build this thing. And I was very focused on time. You can either be flexible with time or the resources like the team or the scope. I think I was probably a lot more fixated on time being a fixed factor without taking into account at that early stage, like the actual scope and like what that actually meant in terms of building. I was probably pushing back more than I probably needed to. I think the way that the team probably reacted in that instance was they were getting burnt out. I could see it. I'm Simi Singh. I am Chief Product Officer at Hook.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
It's 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing at the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
It took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labbart, and today, how Simi Singh is giving you a way to create viral remixes and then easily share them with the world. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Grow your API user adoption and improve engineering velocity with friction-free integration experiences. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in minutes. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, and AutoTrader, you're in good hands. Join the Wolfpack at qawolf.com. Simi Singh grew up in Australia when her parents migrated from India. She studied law and finance at university and then went into investment banking during some tumultuous times. Eventually, she got interested in tech and worked for teams at Intuit, Savin, and Spotify during the times of the Anchor acquisition and launching features around video podcasts. But outside of tech, she's married with two kids. She loves to travel, watch movies, and to do craft projects, as building is a key theme in her life. While Simi was at Spotify, a prior colleague of hers approached her about a product he was building. When she heard the details of what was being built, she felt that it was the culmination of all of her professional experiences, and she had to jump on board. This is the creation story of Hook Music.
Hook is a short-form music remix app. That's one component to it. We found this gap in the market, essentially, where we're seeing this trend where people wanted to express themselves through music. If you think about every creative medium on the internet has gone through this evolution where it's starting with text through Twitter, the barriers to creating has just been reduced. With photos, Instagram came along and everyone became a photographer. With videos, a similar thing happened with TikTok. With music, there's always been this like creative barrier to it. You have to have this like technical knowledge. We haven't really had a breakthrough app that has really allowed everyday people to be able to make music or express themselves through music. However, we are starting to see that trend. I think with the first phase of the internet where there's Spotify who allowed people to access music widely, they opened up that ability to do that. At the same time, social media was getting people accustomed to this idea of expression. And I think it all came to a head with TikTok, which was bringing music and social media together in those early days. 40% of the music on TikTok is a remixed version of a song that people are expressing themselves through. And when we saw that as an insight, we felt like, okay, there's demand. People want to do more with music, but they just don't have the tools to do it. The whole idea about Hook was to make music expression simple and easy. Everything that was out there was a very complicated product. It was built for a different use case. It was built for professional musicians or producers. There's nothing there for the everyday person. And I will be the first one to say, I'm not musically trained. I don't understand everything about music, but I love music. I love covers of songs. I change lyrics of a song that I love. I love playing around with music, but there's no tool for me to do that. What Hook offers is this ability to choose any song from a catalog and choose a 30-second snippet of it, apply any filter, a genre filter. You can take a country song and turn it into a hip-hop song with just a couple of taps. You can mash up a song within a few seconds through our algorithm, and you can add a video to it and make a mini music video and post it on the app as well as on social media. Our founder, Gaurav Sharma, he had an insight, having worked in basically 10, 15 years of music streaming. The way to actually build a sustainable music product, it's not just about the tech. You also need to bring the industry along on the journey. And so the other half of Hook is the enterprise product, which is built for the music labels, the publishing houses, the ability to not just ingest licensed content, but be able to set really granular permissions. This was a key learning from the streaming days, building streaming products. The way that we were able to get music partners, labels and partners onto streaming was because they had this comfort and confidence that they had controls on how they wanted their music to be used on different platforms, whether it was geography controls, whether it was like business model economic controls. In a similar way with Hook, we're building like very granular permissions around, okay, if you might want this part of the catalog to be available for mashups, but for this part of the catalog, you don't. And you do want to make it available for certain genres to be remixed with. Providing that level of granularity and control to the rights holders is a really important part of bringing them onto Hook and being part of this new evolution of music consumption and music expression. I've always worked in these like product adjacent areas in the last, I would say, 10 years of my professional career. When Hook came along as an opportunity, I was really excited by it. Gaurav, I worked with at GeoSavin. He was someone I essentially reported to him and worked very closely with him to launch businesses and things like that within the company. When he talked to me about, hey, I'm building this music product that has this creation aspect and it has this like consumption aspect, it felt like this perfect opportunity where it was a culmination of all of my experiences at Spotify, at Savin, and just all the things I love.
Let's dive into the MVP. So that first version of the product you built, how long did it take to build and what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
So we had this grand vision of what Hook can be and what it should be and everything. When I joined the company, we had a prototype, which, you know, helped us get the funding and everything. And it was a great start. But when we had to really think about, okay, what is the product we put out there in the world as a first proof point? We had to really think about, okay, what are the different types of users that are out there? And we had a good starting point there. We already knew the types of users that were doing this, like they were making remix versions of songs. So the first like initial part of the planning around this was talking to those users and understanding what their pain points were, what is their workflow, how do they think about choosing music and remixing, and what does it look like in the pro world? How could we simplify it? That led us to getting narrow on an ideal customer profile of the music remixers who are just doing sped up and slowed down versions. They're applying just like simple effects. We focused in on like building those initial features. We didn't have to come up with a world of effects, but we felt like the critical ones were allowing sped up, slowed down, a few genre filters to give us insight around whether people do find that to be a time saver versus using a pro tool. And then mashups. We felt like this was a really magical experience. Right now, someone, if they had to make a mashup, they'd have to listen to a range of songs, understand if the beats match, and play around with it. Like it can take hours to build that. And we had come up with a way to do it within seconds. We are recommending you like songs that would mash up, and not just songs, but like parts of songs. We're basically making a mashup within like seconds. So we felt like that was like the core feature set that we could launch with. We set ourselves some aggressive sort of timelines. We wanted to do it within 2 months. Then it was about understanding, okay, what is the tech stack to build something like this and do it in a way, because we didn't have content at that time. We hadn't signed any deals. So this would really need to be in a beta phase to begin with in a closed environment. So we could at least get the product out there with some sample music and get the feedback around whether this is a compelling enough product.
You know, when you're building an MVP, when you're getting that first version of the product out where you can get, you know, that feedback, you got to make the hard decisions and trade-offs, right? Now, here you kind of touching on a few. Maybe dive into the biggest one that you had to work through and how you cope with those decisions.
The one big one I remember having a lot of debates and discussions around was our studio experience. We wanted the experience to feel familiar, but there are a lot of rules around UX, UI design, where you can break up the process between a step one, step two, step three, you get the user to do different steps and they can focus on that. And I remember with the designer and some of our team members, they felt that doing a step-by-step process would be more intuitive. And I really was pushing for, we just want to get the user in the experience as quickly as possible and get the feeling of a studio all at once, whilst keeping things simple as well. So it was definitely a greater challenge from a design perspective to figure out how do we do that? Because the whole value prop is, we don't want it to feel like a pro tool. We don't want audio waves, you know, on your screen, which reminds you of these like very overwhelming tools. That kind of actually was a nice forcing function because it allowed us to like really challenge ourselves to reduce the amount of things that we want to then put in front of the app. So once we got over the decision of like, when someone signs up, they're going to be taken to the studio. It's not going to be a step-by-step process. They're going to just be immersed into the experience. And because they were going to do that, let's start with only offering them these three or four things. And that allowed us to not overload that experience and reduce the amount of things we had to do as well. We still had to figure out what are the things that would take longer versus shorter period of time. There were some things that, especially in the mashup experience, I think the team wanted to add a lot more control and things like that. But I think my pushback would always be, we can always add those things later if people are really demanding those things and banging on our door to add those features. And I kept using myself as like the first sort of test user of, is this something that I care about? As someone that knows nothing about music, this is a cool feature for someone that would be a certain type of profile on hook one day, but is this something that's needed on day one? And there's like this constant like assessment of every feature of like, how essential is this? But then also making sure it doesn't feel like a half-baked experience. It was definitely a journey to arrive on what is the feature set that we want to launch with. And I think the other constraint was time. Some things just were going to take longer to build. And so we're like, look, this can be a later thing that we can continue to build and iterate on. But the main focus was like, we got to ship something out there. Until we get real world feedback, we're just not going to know if this is a direction that is worth investing in.
This message is sponsored by Snaptrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with Snaptrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, Snaptrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. Snaptrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory.
I'm so pumped about my new offshore dev partner. I'm saving a ton, and they even signed an NDA. Wait, is that our financial statements on the internet?
My dev partner has great communication. They can acknowledge an issue or email message super fast after they run it through Google Translate, of course.
I have a call set up with my partner right now. Hey, guys. Guys, are you there? Wait, did you just ghost me?
Ever been in these situations? Yeah, me too. That is, until I found Tekla. Tekla is world-class, nearshore talent for technology teams who demand the highest standards. The platform gives you access to over 50,000 vetted Latin America technology experts, including developers, designers, and IT professionals, all fluent in English and all in your time zone. In 7 days or less, you can have your tech expert hired through Tekla's fast, efficient hiring process, which helps you find and onboard top candidates. Get senior-level talent at competitive rates, often half the cost of hiring in the U.S., but aligned with U.S. work culture and time zones, making teamwork easy and productive. Hire the best tech experts today with Tekla. Learn more at tekla.io. That's T-E-C-L-A.io. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Whether you're growing the user adoption of your public API or streamlining internal development, SDKs can turn the chore of API integration into effortless implementation. Unburden your API users from guessing their way around your API while keeping your team focused on your product. Shorten the time to live integration and provide a delightful experience for your customers. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate up-to-date, robust, idiomatic SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in just a matter of minutes. SDKs are feature-rich with type safety, auto-retries, and pagination. Everything you need to give your API the developer experience it deserves. Deliver a premium API experience without the premium price tag. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory to get started and generate your first SDK for free. So then let's move forward. You've got the MVP, you've got the product out there, you're getting the feedback. How are you going about building your roadmap? How do you go about deciding, okay, based on feedback and based on the vision, this is the next most important thing to build or to address with Hook?
there was already probably a backlog of things given our customer profiles and use cases we wanted to address, which was those remix creators who were already remixing. There were already like a set of things we knew we had to build to improve the value prop. But then the other major source of what would get prioritized on the roadmap would be speaking to those beta users and asking them, like showing them, asking them what is the most frustrating thing about this experience right now. And they had a ton, like they had a lot of great feedback of this is what I normally do and this is what Hook is allowing me to do. There were some good things, but then there were some limiting things as well. And it was really like digging deeper on those areas and understanding, okay, what can be a V1 that we can bring to market? And so that allowed us to continue to iterate. I think one great example of that was, again, the mashup experience, the scrolling experience and being able to find the section of the song that you want was just very confusing. We thought it made a lot of sense for the users. They were like, this is like baseline, something that's so critical to the experience. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's just not as accurate as I would expect. And so we had to go back to the drawing board on what is the logic around this? How do we like simplify this for the user? Even though we had some cool things we wanted to build, like it ended up taking higher priority on the roadmap than some of those newer features. And I think in that early stage, the balance between new features and continuing to improve your existing features is always this like positive tension I feel like we always have to deal with. Even today, we've built some foundations for a really good product, but you also want to open up new use cases to understand if that's going to help drive stickiness and retention in some way. But there is something to making sure the core product, even if it's in its like basic stage, still is working and is working smoothly. I've found this like constant debate even in like slightly more mature products like I did at Spotify and Sava, and it's over there we were also debating the same sort of like, what is the focus on new versus existing features, how do we prioritize those? And I think it's a natural evolution. I think it depends on the context of what the goals of the business are. And for us, it was like, we need to really own this customer profile and make sure the product works for them. And so prioritizing the core feature set and improvements and making sure it's working really well for them while still like trying to open up new use cases.
Tell me about how you're going about building your team. What are you going to look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
When I joined Hook, I was like the second or third person that joined the team. We didn't have a product. So once we decided on what the MVP would be and the tech stack needed to be to support that, the first thing was like, okay, we need people to help us build this. We need engineers. I ended up hiring about 10 engineers in the first like 3 months to actually get this off the ground, because we're such a complex product. There's a music tech side to it, plus there's this whole music algorithm and mobile experience that we're building. We, I think, had to canvas our story out there and talk about the vision, the product, and the 2 to 3 year journey, and assess candidates really on how excited they are about the opportunity and look for some relevant experience. It depended on the area. So I think like on the back end side, we did want someone with some music tech knowledge, like music back end engineering knowledge, because that was important with the goals of the business in it being integrated into the music industry standards. So some knowledge of that was really important. And we ended up hiring someone who had not just music, but just general content back-end engineering knowledge. We're transcoding because we also had video component in our app. We had some really great people we spoke to, but the person that we ended up going with, who's been a fantastic asset to the company, they have just a generalist skill set and knowledge, just having seen different companies throughout their experience, but then could get into the weeds and start building as well. Everyone on the team today is a domain expert in the area. So we have two mobile engineers, two backend engineers, and two machine learning AI people, as well as we have a couple of like more specialist requirements around audio processing library. That's so unique to the product that we're building. It was just a requirement. We ended up having more of a consultant relationship with that person, but it was so critical to building that early stage of the product that we didn't know we needed until we decided that this was, if we needed to build the experience we wanted, was going to be required. So I think where we've landed is we wanted people who are doers, who can get involved. We also wanted people that are vocal. It can very easily turn into the product team is asking us to build this, so I'll just build it. We didn't want this like service-based approach. We wanted the team to feel invested in what we're building and take their own initiative to fix things or offer, hey, there's a better way to do these things. And I'm really proud of the culture that we've now built, is that everyone comes to it from the perspective of we hold each other accountable, but we come at it from the perspective of how do we build the best solution in the fastest way possible with the team that we have.
This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. If slow QA processes bottleneck your software engineering team and you're releasing slower because of it, you need a solution. You need QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship five times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, AutoTrader, and many more, you're in good hands. Ready to ship faster with fewer bugs? Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com to see if they can help you squash the QA bottleneck. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. This episode is sponsored by Vanta. You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors. But they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. And that's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How, you ask? Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/codestory. That's vanta.com/codestory. Okay, let's flip to scalability. Was this built to scale from day one, or with scale in mind, or has there been interesting areas where you've had to fight it as you've grown?
From the vision perspective, we always wanted to be set up for scale. So as an example, like we wanted from day one to have the DDEX standards for content ingestion set up. We knew we wanted to partner with the largest music labels, and all of them work with. If there was any chance of us to work with them, that would be the number one requirement, is like they would want a DDEX standard content ingestion system. While that might not be necessary for a different scope of an app, given the vision of us building an ecosystem solution, we knew the robustness, the building for that scale early on would be important. In practice, how do we get there with the team that we have? I think that was where we were fighting a lot of the battles. So it was really going, okay, we're not going to get that on day one. To build something like that would just require you to just focus on that for 2 to 3 months. So we had to really discuss and debate, like, what is crawl, walk, run of even something like that. And then even building like the data infrastructure around, we're going to be collecting a lot of data at scale, but today, do we need that? So I think initially we ended up taking, let's just go with something that we understand based on the team's experience and expertise. And then honestly, 6 months later, we did realize we needed to change up things and approach things differently. We're making those changes 6 to 9 months later after we'd launched the product. Again, we tried to bring it back to what is the goal? We got to ship this thing. We got to get it after the beta phase. We've actually got to launch on the App Store. Those were the like high priority milestones, but not forgetting that wherever we can, we try to build the foundations at least sometimes. And because we were building a unique product that at least we didn't have any playbook for, it wasn't like we're just another music streaming service where there's good understanding of what is required. We could take some inspiration from it, but it wasn't exactly the same scenario. I think in some cases we didn't know what we didn't know. So we had to launch with something. After we did launch with something and we built something, I know the engineers realized like that was the wrong thing to build. We've got to like scrap that thing and rebuild it, but trying to work around something you've already built actually added more complications. So there are definitely a few scenarios like that, that I think we only realize what we actually needed after we got further into building the product, getting it out there, getting more feedback from whether it's users or our enterprise partners around what needed to be built. The way we've been able to get through it is just take that learning mindset of, okay, we didn't know that. Based on the information we had at that time, that seemed like the right choice, whether it was the tech stack or even the programming language. But today, with what we know, and then thinking about scale from here on out, we do need to change things, and making room for those changes has served us well, at least for now.
So as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, with Hook in particular, what are you most proud of?
I'm so proud of the fact that within 9 months, we've been able to build an industry standard product that people love. People actually, I check my dashboard every day, and seeing the numbers go up and to the right is really exciting. And the fact that it's a really complicated product under the hood, but on the surface level, like to any everyday person, it's just like a really simple, intuitive, feels like a very, you know, familiar app to you. But what it can do, like when I explain to people, or they realize what's probably going on, especially like the music tech folks, I think they're blown away. And having that sort of affirmation from a community of music lovers, equally like music lovers, music experts, to people who have no knowledge of music and they still enjoy using the app, I think gives me a lot of contentment and a lot of excitement. And the fact that we've been able to do it in 9 months, from not having any team to going through the beta phase to getting it launched on the App Store by September, is just an incredible feat for such a small team.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
A lot of my background is from operations and strategy and making sure things are running on time and all of that. So taking on this product role and working with engineers, I found that I was initially taking that approach of, okay, team, we have 2 months to build this thing. And I was very focused on time. You can either be flexible with time or the resources like the team or the scope. It's really hard to do all three when you have constrained resources or budgets. I think I was probably a lot more fixated on time being a fixed factor without taking into account at that early stage, like the actual scope and like what that actually meant in terms of building. I was probably taking the approach of, we've got to ship this thing as quickly as possible without taking into account, like, it's going to take X amount of time to build even like a basic version of that. Even though the team was giving that feedback, I was probably pushing back more than I probably needed to. I think the way that the team probably reacted in that instance was they were getting burnt out. I could see it. There were a lot more mistakes. The team just looked very unhappy working too much. I had to take a step back and be like, this is not healthy. And I started to like communicate back to the leadership group and saying, like, what flexibility do we have on timelines? Turns out like there was a little bit of room, not that we can just take our time forever. Making that mindset switch from like just being an operations person, which is all about like delivery, timelines, everything, but also being mindful of happy and productive team is going to have a much better outcome from quality of product, a team that is more productive. And I think at the very base level, like building trust. And I think what really unlocked all of this was just having, even though we're such a small team, having retros in the team to be like, okay, what is the feedback? And the first retro, we had a ton of feedback and it was around this. The timeline expectations are completely unrealistic. I think what I wasn't factoring in was they were also learning the product. They were also learning the tech. This wasn't something that they'd built before necessarily. Even though they have experience in the space, like it's still, there is a ramp up time that's required. And I'm really grateful for the team flagging that and giving that direct feedback, because that allowed me the permission to be like, look, this is not going to work.
Okay, so let's move forward then. I'm excited to hear what you have to say here, especially as a product visionary for Hook. Tell me what the future looks like for the product and for your team.
We have so many exciting areas of the product. There's the core music tech experience around creation, just bringing more filters and more ways to express yourself through music. One area we're thinking about is how do you mix audio with music? So we see this trend of the man in finance and that being remixed over and over, like taking everyday social media clips, using your own voice and remixing that with your favorite song. There's just like an array of music expression tools that we can bring to people and bring excitement and interest around that. But then there's also this whole, which I wasn't expecting. We always viewed ourselves as the music creation part of the flow for creators. But a lot of our creators are saying we also want video tools. It's just too annoying to like switch between apps. I think they're especially interested in music video tools. We don't want to be the CapCut. We don't want to be a video tool, video creation tool, but we can certainly bring video creation tools that are focused on music. Like, for example, how can we bring lyrics as an experience within video? How do we auto sync video to the music that you've created? How do we bring the artwork from the albums and make that a lot more personalized to making your expression? And so that has unlocked, okay, like I think a future direction when I think about growth of the team one day, it's not just about thinking about the core music creation and music tech, but it's like the music and video tech side of it. And then I think the other area is what we're starting to see in our consumer behavior is people aren't just interested in creating on the app. They're also interested in consuming on the app. So all these hooks that are on the platform, we're seeing really interesting behaviors around people like listening to their own hooks, listening and wanting to listen over and over of hooks that they've found on the platform and building consumption experiences around that. So we want to have a player in the app and have a queue system so you can build your own playlists. Although we started, and I think it was the right thing to do from the core creation experience, which will always be our kind of bread and butter. But obviously, given the feedback and interest from the people that are coming to the app, there's also this kind of video element to it, but like in the context of music and this whole consumption side of it, which is super exciting. So that's on the app side. And then I'll say there's a whole thing that we don't have the capacity to really invest in right now. but I'd love to build out like further our enterprise offering. The artist teams and the label teams, giving them more direct access to being able to manage their music on the platform. And right now we're doing it like in a very lean way through an admin portal and everything, but I'd love to be able to have an artist dashboard or a label dashboard where those teams can see how their tracks are performing, how many creators are interacting with users, are interacting with their tracks, and how many hooks are they creating, interesting insights. They can build campaigns to promote those new releases or even older tracks in their catalog. So I feel like there's just two or three areas that once we have the capacity, would love to invest in, and we're just getting by, but already areas that people have asked us about and are demanding, but we're holding back until we can.
Okay, let's switch to you, Sammy. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
People that I'm most inspired by are just people who seem to just get a lot done in the day. And I think that's like from a productivity perspective. There are many people throughout my time at working at different companies that I find, wow, they just are so engaged in not just this meeting, but in every meeting I see. From a productivity perspective, the ability to delegate versus like spending time on making time for like the bigger ticket things, but also getting through the smaller things that you have to get through. My previous boss at Spotify. Then I think from a strategic perspective, I would say Jeff Bezos. I feel like I just really appreciate his clarity of thinking in being able to cut through. And he's come up with a lot of shortcut ways of thinking about problem solving. And I think like one example is when you're thinking about strategy, it's not just about what you want to do, it's about what you don't want to do or what you shouldn't be doing. And one way to think about that is, given your business, what are things that aren't going to change in the next 5 years? In the example of Amazon, he talked about your customers are never going to want things to be slower in terms of shipping. And they're never not going to want less choice. They're always going to want more products, more product choices, and they're always going to want things to be shipped faster to them. He has a team of leaders and people that are just focused on those two pillars of the company, for instance, and just constantly making those areas better and better. And that's just like a good framework of thinking, at least for me, especially in these early stages where it's like, it feels like there's a lot of uncertainty and things are very ambiguous sometimes. Could this happen? Could this not happen? And coming back and centering around, okay, what is not going to change in the next 5 years? Creators are always going to want more control. They're always going to want more expression. So trying to plan around things that won't change, I think, is a helpful way to think about what's important in all of the different things that like come your way in terms of what you should work on. And so I found that to be helpful, at least from Jeff Bezos. And I'll say lastly, Gaurav Sharma, who, as I mentioned, founder and CEO of Hook, I find his ability to think about the 360 view, similar to some other industries like sports and so on, like there's a lot going on in this industry. It's a very concentrated industry in some ways. Whenever I'm thinking about the product from a consumer perspective and building solutions, I think he always has this super insightful perspective around not just thinking about, yes, we should build what's best for them, that's like non-negotiable, but like, how does this address the needs of the music industry? How will this evolve and change over the next 3 to 5 years? And what problems are we solving them and connecting the two? I think he's been so inspiring in that perspective and a great partner to have, because I haven't necessarily been exposed to that in the past, but his depth of knowledge and insight and like ability to pick on those things has been a great input to then have this feeling of, yeah, these things are important. These areas of focus are really important right now because it also addresses these needs that the industry has.
Last question, Sammy. So you're getting on a plane. You're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
first of all, I'd say congrats. You shipped this thing. That's like the biggest hurdle to get through. So kudos to actually getting it out there and getting over all the hurdles in your mind and socially or even economic constraints wise, like you took the initiative, built this thing and got it out there. That's like the biggest thing you can do to learn about whether this product has any legs. And then I would say, talk to people who are using this product. It's so important. Like, you can get stuck in your own bubble and have a lot of assumptions about how this is being used. But talking to real people, your actual customers and users, and especially people who came and didn't use it, I think are the most important cohorts to listen to, because they're the ones that are going to tell you straight up like why this might not be working for you, and paying attention to that. I think that gives the biggest clues as to what need to focus on making this the best app and the biggest product you can ever build. I think just from a life perspective, I would probably say balance is really important. I've always believed like balance in everything is important. Cutting some slack for themselves and making sure they're taking care of themselves so they can produce the best work that they can.
Well, that's fantastic advice. Well, Simi, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Hook.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Noah.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.